You're listening to the Asking for a Friend podcast, an elder-led ministry of Believers Baptist Church in Emory, Texas. The Asking for a Friend podcast exists as a weekly resource for the edification and knowledge of God's people. My name is Tyler Jones. I'm your host. Thanks for listening in, whoever you may be and wherever you may be. May the Lord bless this podcast to you as a means of grace for your spiritual growth. On the podcast today is Jason Rowland. He's a senior pastor and one of the elders of Believers Baptist Church. And we have a special guest today, Miss Linda Brendel. She is a member of our congregation. She's also an author and knows much, has done much study and research about this subject, which is a difficult subject at times, sex trafficking. So welcome, Linda, and we're glad to have you on. But I think what we'll do is we'll go to Jason. He's got some stats. He's got some thoughts. And so we'll go to him first.
Well, thank you, Tyler. It is definitely a difficult circumstance or a difficult reality to talk about as we think about sex trafficking. And I remember when I was introduced to this reality back in about 2012, 2013, and that's when I began to understand this is not something that is distant from me, but it's right here in our local vicinity, in our local area, in the state in which we live. And so that's when I began to think more seriously about this and begin to have a burden toward this issue of sex trafficking. Now, in order for us to think about this, we did ask Linda Brendel to come on the podcast today. Her and her husband David are our dear friends, and as Tyler said, they are members of our congregation. And I think, Linda, you've been a member since 2011.
Correct.
And we met as you had moved to Texas from Florida. And I can't remember the exact details of how we met, but anyway, I remember coming to your house and we had a visit.
Right. Well, we had visited the church two or three times, and you knew we were moving.
Right.
And you had offered to help, and we had moved by, we were living in our RV while we rehabbed our mobile home, and we had a pod that we'd moved our furniture from Florida. And we were able to get it out a little at a time, but we finally got to the end where we had a huge couch and a couple of other big pieces. And I said, I'm not doing it. So David said, well, we got to get some help. So I called you and said, did you mean it? And within just 15 minutes, you and Murray's son were there and just had it moved in shortly.
Right.
And I remember, as you left, you said, now, I don't want you to feel like this obligates you to come to our church. We just wanted to, we were just glad to help. But, of course, this is where the Lord led us anyway. So.
Yes, and we have been blessed. And, in fact, you were the administrative assistant
yes.
to the church from 2015 to 2019. Is that correct?
It sounds about right.
I think it was about that. And it was a sad day when you decided to retire and move on. But we're thankful that we've had our relationship together.
Right.
And I've been blessed.
We have been blessed, too.
Well, let's talk about the subject because it is a difficult subject, as we've already said. There's a lot of thought and emotion as we enter into this discussion about this. And just so that people understand that this is a real issue in our culture, and it is, in fact, I believe, probably increasing when we think about all the different statistics and information that is out there now. But over a million children, this is children that we're talking about. We're not talking about adults. We're talking about children are trafficked each year. And the average age of those children, unbelievably, are 11 to 14. And in Texas alone, there was one study that we have information about that says that there are 79,000 child sex trafficking victims in our state alone. And so the point, I guess, that we need to bring to that thought is that it's not something that's far away. It's not in a country that is across the ocean somewhere. It's not in a big city like New York City or Los Angeles or even Dallas, but it's right here as close as Tyler, Texas, where we see and have a lot of information concerning sex trafficking in Smith County. That's where we have had connections in our ministry and our involvement with trying to understand how to help with this issue. So just again, to help us think about this, Linda, what about sex trafficking? It doesn't occur only in the United States, but what do you know about it, and how does this help us to think about it beyond just...
I was like you. I didn't really know it was that much of a problem, especially not close. I thought it was over there somewhere. But in my research and study of it, I found that it's in every country, including the United States.
Right. I think I said the question wrong. I interrupted you. Mm-hmm. But sex trafficking does occur in the United States, and we tend to think it doesn't.
Right. And we tend to think, too, that sex trafficking in the United States occurs in New York or L.A. or the big mega cities, but it does not just happen there. It happens everywhere. It happens right here in our areas to kids that we know. We might the kids that you see in the grocery store, some of them might have been trafficked. You just never know.
Right. And so it's closer than we want to even believe.
Absolutely.
What about sex trafficking? Are they only foreign victims that are trafficked? Or are there any parameters around the classifications of people that are get involved in this or that are taking advantage of?
No, and I think that the media does, the entertainment media does a disservice in there because they tend to portray trafficking victims as being ethnic, as being poor, as being foreigners, immigrants, or whatever, but they're not. It's every race, every gender, every nationality, and every socioeconomic group. It's not just the poor, it's the rich, it's everybody.
Well, true or false, is human trafficking a sex slave? Is it a small problem compared to drugs?
It's hard to find statistics because, you know, this is, like you said, it's not a pleasant thing and people don't really want to report it. Mm. But statistics I found said that human trafficking, sex trafficking, which are the human trafficking is the larger one that includes slave labor and that kind of thing. But the sex trafficking is in one of the top three of the biggest crime problems in the U.S. And there's experts disagree as to whether drugs or sex trafficking is number two or three.
Yeah, they probably flip-flop depending on the season or the time. For example, I was shocked to know that the Super Bowl week, you know, when the NFL goes to the city that's hosting the Super Bowl and there's an elaborate pre-game events and celebrations and all of these things, that is the highest number of sex trafficked people or children is during those weeks before the Super Bowl.
Right, and it's not just the Super Bowl. It's any big sporting events or a sport trade shows, that kind of thing. They gravitate around that where there are people traveling who do things they might not do at home.
Mm-hmm. There are men traveling that are not accountable to anybody at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And have the exposable or dispensable income, I should say. And they can then take advantage of whatever they choose under those circumstances. And so whether it's drugs or whether it's sex trafficking, those are certainly real and big issues in our culture. It's the sex trafficking, though, that I believe that we don't hear as much about or we know less about.
Right.
And I think about this average age that I mentioned, 11 to 14. That is shocking to think that an 11-year-old is being used for the benefit of a buyer to such a horrendous degree. I just can't hardly even wrap my mind around that.
Right, right. It's a hard thing to think about, but it's unfortunately it's very true. There are people who will buy the younger the better.
Right. And so all of this helps, I think, maybe for the listener to think that this is a real issue. But now I want to talk about how that you get to be the expert on this. because the Linda Brindle that I know should not know about these things that she writes in the books that she wrote concerning this. So you're an author, as Tyler said in the beginning. And you have four books that you've written.
Actually, five.
Five?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You forget Kitty.
I do forget Kitty. And so we've got the story. There's a series that you've done in all of these books. It's about Tasha.
Right.
And tell us a little bit about Tasha, and because I want to recommend these books. And these things, they make my blood boil. And there's
my work is done.
these are, and I know that some of our congregation who are listening to this podcast will have read your books, and I think that they have some of the same thoughts and emotions and feelings that I have. But Tasha is a character that you introduced into this idea of sex trafficking. Maybe we should go all the way back. How did you come to write the book?
Right.
The first one is Tasha's Tattoo.
Correct.
Okay, so how did you come to write the book?
Well, it's your fault. You invited Julie and Kenny Rigsby from Tyler. They have For the Silent. They organized For the Silent. You invited them here on a Sunday evening a number of years ago to give a presentation about their organization. And it was eye-opening to me. Before then, I was had the very narrow view that sex trafficking happened over there somewhere. And they told a different story. They told about their organization that rescues children, mostly girls, but sometimes boys, from in East Texas. I mean, they started out internationally, but they narrowed their focus, I guess, as they found out, too, that it was more local. And there is an active sex trafficking ring in Smith County, as you said. And it's known about. In fact, my brother asked if it's known about, why don't they stop it? Well, because they can't get people to testify. But that's changing. But I digress. Anyway, they told a story. They told several stories, but they told one about a 13-year-old girl who had been, she was lonely. She was a foster child, I think, and she was approached by this handsome stranger asking for directions, and he gave her a compliment and then said goodbye, and she didn't think any more about it. But then he groomed her over the next weeks and months. They would run into each other, and he would. They started talking, and then he started giving her little gifts, and then the gifts got more expensive, and she fell in love with him because he would tell her how beautiful she was, and nobody ever told her that before. And before you know it, one night he says, I've been spending a lot of money on you, and I need you to do me a favor. I need you to be nice to my friend for a little while. And he controlled her from then on with fear, with threats, and with the what they call the Stockholm Syndrome. You know, she was in love with him, and well, if I just do this just one more time, maybe he'll really love me. And but threats against her, violence against her, violence against her family, her friends, and things like that. So, and it just hit my heart, and I thought, this is a story that people need to hear, because I know that I'm not the only one that didn't know this happened.
Right.
So I began to write the book, and it just grew. It started out with this, and a few months before this experience, David and I had been counselors at a camp for foster children, and it was a heart-wrenching experience and life-changing. And after hearing the presentation from Kenny, I realized how vulnerable some of those children that we counseled were. And it just broke my heart. So I combined their stories, and I started the novel. And then it just grew from there. The tattoo issue came in because my son, who is an author also and into media a lot, and he had met a man in Chicago who was a Christian tattoo artist. And he wanted to combine his some sort of ministry with his love of tattoos. And so he began, and he was working with the gang, the inner city gang through the police department. And he started offering free cover-up tattoos because the gangs tattoo their members tattooed, and if they leave the gang, then those tattoos cause problems. They can't get jobs. They get beat up by other gangs. You know, all sorts of things. So he offered free cover-up tattoos, and he was amazed. I don't remember the stats exactly, but I think the first month he did 300. Well, then girls started coming to him who had been prostituted, who had been trafficked, and their pimps had tattooed them. And so he started doing it from that. So that became Jesse, the Christian tattoo artist in Tasha's Tattoo. And the name changed. It was our father's house, and it changed to Tasha's Tattoo.
Right. You'll have to read the story to understand what she's talking about in terms of the relationship between Tasha and Jesse and how that began to develop. But that introduction to this whole idea of sex trafficking was, for me, at that same time. It was about 2012, and then I had the Kenny and his wife Julie came that night, and that was in 2013, and you wrote this book, Tasha's Tattoo, in 2015. Mm-hmm. Is that right? And so with that book, Stacy and my kids and I, we went to Colorado, and we read that as we traveled on our summer vacation that year. And it was really hard to put down, and it did make our blood boil. There was a lot of emotion and a lot of thought in it because of how this girl was taken advantage of and how she was used and how it just turned into this horrendous trap that she could not find her way out of. And I think what makes it so difficult is because, as you said, that's real.
Right.
It's not a novel for certain people. It is a reality of their life, and some never are able to escape that.
Right. Tasha was one of the lucky ones.
Which she was. And it's a great story. We're not speak to that so that your listeners, our listeners, could buy the book and read it for themselves. But it is a great story. And then you just came out last year with the sequel.
Yes.
But in fact, Tasha's Tattoo was so well received and liked, at least by a lot of people. You did have an incident when someone was angry that you wrote it. Tell us about that.
Well, I've had a lot of good positive reaction, but a lot of it's emotional. And we were at the senior center at lunch one day, and one of my friends stalked up to the table and said, "I just read the birthday sequence scene in your book, and it made me nauseous. Is that what you intended?" And I was kind of taken aback, but I sat there for a minute and thought about it. And I said, well, yes, kind of. It's not that I wanted you to feel sick, but I wanted you to feel it. I wanted it to be real to you. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm a Christian author, and I avoid the foul language. I mean, there are a couple of words here and there, but not anything blasphemous. And the scenes are not graphic.
Right.
But they're real. The implications are there, and the emotions are raw and in your face. And because I want you to know it's real, this is not just a story. And they say if there's not tears on the keyboard, then there's not tears for the reader. And based on my crying, there's a lot of tears in the readers.
Well, and I can testify to tears for the reader, definitely. And when you then, because of the positive comments that you received from the book, it led you to do a sequel to the story.
Right.
Because we can say that there's a good ending in Tasha's Tattoo.
Yes.
And then that leads, though, to the new sequel that Stacy and Brialy and I just finished. And again, it was just one of those nail biters. And I got mad at you because you won't make the story come to an end. There's, I mean, you just keep it moving, and it's frustrating. I want it to stop. And you know, what's disturbing is I'll look at my faithful church member, and I know her heart, and I read these birthday scenes and the kidnapping scenes and the taking the photographs, and I'm like, how does Linda Brindle know about this stuff? I don't know about this stuff. This is just horrendous. But
well, I can tell you how I know about this stuff.
Yes,
lots of research.
Yes.
First thing I did was I went to the For the Silent website and read every word of it. I did research on other websites for other sex trafficking salvation type thing, you know, try to rescue is what I'm looking for. Read all of those, and I talked to people. Jeremy Case in our congregation is a former police officer, and he worked in Vice. So he was very helpful. In fact, we were at a potluck after church one day, and I cornered him at his table and asked if I could talk to him and pick his brain, and he said, sure. And after I talked to him for a while, his wife, who's funny, she's just so funny, Tennille, she stood up and said, well, I'm going to go find somebody else to talk to while y'all talk about being arrested for prostitution. Okay. But I did. I had to ask, you know, what is the process when you go through when someone is processed into jail? I mean, what happens then? I mean, I've seen it on TV, but I wanted it to be true. And then I have a cousin who is a CPS attorney in Arkansas. And so she was invaluable. There is, at the end, there's kind of a third act, if you would, which is in the courtroom.
This is in Tasha's tattoo.
Yes, in Tasha's.
This courtroom scene that is really riveting. It really is. Right.
And she gave me lots of points on, well, first of all, you've got to find out what they're charged for, because you've got to word that correctly. And then she read it, and not just the courtroom, but she also said the way I had portrayed the grooming process. She said that's the way it happens more times than not. People think that kids are snatched off the street, but they're groomed more often than not. And so,
because it places them in a trap.
It does. It's like a trap that you can't get out of. Mm-hmm. And so that helped. And then also, it's amazing what you can find on Google. When you Google, I mean, there are actually websites that you can go to and say, how do you word it when you present evidence into the court as an exhibit? And it will tell you. I don't know if this is for authors particularly, or if it's for law students, or what it's for, but you can find all sorts of things online. So that's how it was. I was talking to Brenda yesterday, Brenda German, at church, and we were talking about what we were doing. I said, I've been researching the third book in the series, and I said, I'm probably on somebody's watch list, because the other day I looked up pictures of an AK-47 and an MP5 so I could pick out which one this certain character was going to carry. She said, oh, yeah, you're on somebody's list.
So it's more than a lot of NCIS and a lot more than CSI.
Yes, and, it's more
reading
than that.
Mysteries.
It's more than that.
Yes. And it's well researched. It's done well, and I think people would be well informed about this grooming process, mm-hmm. the whole legal procedures that go through a conviction and to bring about the changes. Because sex trafficking and prostitution are not the same thing.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. All child prostitutes have been sex trafficked. And all adult prostitutes, if they have been coerced or forced, even if it was back when they were a child, they're still considered sex trafficking victims. Mm-hmm. But adult prostitutes who've gone into it, you know, on their own, or mm-hmm. so to speak, then that they're not considered to have been trafficked. But also there are other things that are included aside from prostitution, like pornography, taking pictures of children or making them dance in a strip club or something like that is sex trafficking as well.
Well, your sequel then to Tasha's Tattoo is called Fallen Angel Salvage.
Correct.
And so because there's a sequel, then the listeners can probably put it together that Tasha was able to escape the trap that she was in.
Correct.
And started a new life. But this new life was interrupted by the man that had used
Correct.
Her.
Correct. My arch villain.
Right. which you will grow to hate with intensity. And you may have to repent because of the hatred that, that wells up in your heart. In fact, I think one of the lines in your second book, Fallen Angel Savage, refers to Eric, the villain, as scum. which was very fitting when you read the story. But in the end, it leads to this third book that you're now writing, working on right now
Correct.
As we speak.
Correct.
And I look forward to it. I do. But we say all that to say this is a very serious issue.
Right.
And how can we get involved? What can we do? We've already made reference to For the Silent, which is located in Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
We, since 2013, we've had them either in our church budget every year, or we've given money to them apart from our church budget. In fact, just last month, we gave $500 to them because this has become an awakening for us, at least those who have paid attention and thought through this and read your books. It has become an issue that you want to be involved, you want to help. And I know that you and David, your husband, and several of our other church members have gone to the night walk that For the Silent does, which is basically a fundraiser event.
Fundraiser and an awareness raiser.
Yes, yes. Because they can't do this ministry without funds. So, in fact, what I was reading just this morning, the I Have a Voice program, which is prevention education, that's what they do a lot of. And the Longview Police Department, the Tyler Police Department, the law enforcement in Smith County highly recommend and endorse For the Silent because of the ministry that they have and the work that they're doing. It's the prevention education is the only trafficking prevention program offered in East Texas. And it is, according to the website, the idea of getting the victims to rethink their life, their esteem, to understand the dangers of commercial sex trafficking or in the commercial sex industry, trying to help them see that they can come out of that and it be okay. Because again, these prevention education, this prevention education program uses the testimony and the stories of girls who have been able to escape and what their life is like now. So I think that's valuable. And I think we, at least in part, have that avenue. And by the way, those of you who are listening in our area, as I understand it from Kenny, Rigby, and Julie, is when you come into Tyler on Highway 69 and you come to the loop that goes around and you come to that four-way stop there, and there's several hotels around there. That's where a lot of the sex trafficking takes place.
That's my understanding.
And so since that time, since we first were introduced to this, every time that Stacy and I come to that four-way stop, there's a voice prayed for those who would be taken advantage of even at that moment. It might be in the middle of the day.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
No, it does not.
Time of day or...
They may set them up and they may work 10 or 12 hours straight.
Right. They could have as many as 30 clients a day.
Right.
It's just horrendous to think about
it
that.
It is.
But what other ways can we be involved or help in this situation?
That is one of the main reasons. I mean, awareness is one thing, but one of the main reasons that I continue to write about this is to get people's attention, make them aware, but not just leave them there hanging, but to give suggestions about what they can do. I've developed a list of, I mean, there's probably an infinite number, but I personally have a list of 8 different organizations around the country that do various things. And the first thing you need to do is educate yourself. I mean, it's an unpleasant subject, but you can do what I did. You can go online, you can Google it, or you can ask me, and I can give you a list of these organizations or whatever. But you can educate yourself, and then you can volunteer, because they always need, I mean, you go to their website, and they always need something. Like, one of the easiest ones to talk about is at Camp Akiva and Our Father's Children. They need volunteers for their camps. They need counselors. They need photographers. They need people who will set up the different centers, like fishing or sewing or whatever they do. They need grandmothers and grandfathers. They need all sorts of volunteers. Anything you can think of, they probably need some help there. Yes.
So the Camp Akiva is a local church camp in our area. It's actually, the administrators are Wes and Lisa Mosley, who are, again, members of our congregation. And the organization, or the camp, is owned by Our Father's Children. And Our Father's Children then buses in all of these foster children.
Right.
And brings them to the camp. And so the volunteer for the camp and the week that those children are there, mm-hmm, would be a great help, right, and is what you're referring to. Now, if somebody wants to do that, they can call Believers Baptist Church,
right,
and we can make sure that you get the information to get in touch with Wes and Lisa Mosley at Camp Akiva. But I interrupted you.
That's okay. That's quite all right. Then there are some who say, well, I can't volunteer. I don't have the time. I work too much. Or as David and I, we can't really keep up with the kids because it is an intensive week that you spend there. But if you can't volunteer, maybe you can donate, because they always need funds. And they have valid reasons for needing funds, because these things are expensive. If you see what they do for these kids just at this camp, or I'm sure at For the Silent, at these re-education classes that they have, they're not free. Maybe you want to go bigger. Maybe you're a political person. There's always some sort of initiative or a bill or something on the table for more funding, for research into it, and for prevention and for prosecuting and that kind of thing. Write congressmen, senators, whoever might have some influence, research on that. I'm personally not a political animal, so I don't do very well at that. But that's a great way to fight this problem if you can't, if you can. But finally, get involved one-on-one. And that's where I am. I'm personally a one-on-one kind of a person. My heart is for the vulnerable before they become victims.
Right.
This has made me very aware, and I hope that my writings make people aware of the vulnerable children around them. The ones who might become victims, or the dangerous situations, and I don't want to step on toes, but this is one of my pet peeves, is parading your little girls around in makeup and dresses that are not even appropriate for 30-year-olds. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just the danger that we put our children in, and that they get into, not by our fault or anybody else's fault, but just be aware of that. And then,
Linda, let me interrupt you, because you mentioned your heart is the one-on-one. Mm-hmm. And I know you've been a mentor for a little girl for
6 years.
6 years now. Tell a little bit about that. What can you speak to that just briefly?
That has been another one of those life-changing things for me. I mean, in one of our outside the building projects, one of the thing was intermediate school had a mentor program, and they were looking for mentors, and so I signed up, And I met a little 9-year-old girl who was very she was feisty because she was, had defenses up, but she had come in and she'd sit down and she'd talk a little bit, and I'm bored. And, you know, she's kind of prickly, kind of hard to love, but I stuck with it, and we developed a relationship, and I came to be one of the few things that she could depend on in her life, because she comes from a broken home, and she lives with her father, and she sees her mother every other weekend, and grandparents are in the picture, and she'll get promised one thing, and then it's not convenient, and then the promise is broken. And so the fact that I show up every week, one time I missed, and it just almost broke her heart. And it took a long time for me to gain back that trust. Mm-hmm. But at this point, she has told me, you're the only person I can just say anything I want to. And in the process, she has become a Christian, not through me, but because God worked in her. Mm-hmm. I feel like she is... I mean, she's still not out of the woods. She's 15 now, and she's a beautiful young girl and could be a target easily. But I believe that she's developing the strength through our relationship and some other relationships that she's developed that will protect her and make her not as vulnerable to someone like Eric, who is the villain in the stories. But yeah, that's my heart. That Awana. Even though I don't go as regularly as I should because it's hard, mm-hmm. We have anywhere from 50 to 70 kids running around this place on a Wednesday night.
Yes.
And it's a Bible-based, Bible memory-based program, but it's got fun and games, and it's very volunteer-intensive. You have to have a lot of adults for it to be successful. And the most valuable time to me is the book time, where the kids are learning their verses, and the volunteers have anywhere from 1 to 3 or 4 kids at a time, and you can sit there and you can. Sometimes you don't even work on the verses because they want to talk,
right?
And you just talk to them and you look them in the face and you tell them in action and words sometimes. That they're valuable, that they're important, mm-hmm. that they mean something to you. And that's important. There are other things at church. There's nursery, and there's teaching Sunday school, and there's camp. But I know everybody listening may not be into church, but that's okay because there's still secular things. There's sports teams and FFA and all of these different clubs at the school where you can get involved with children, mm-hmm. and make them feel important. Because that's what makes them vulnerable to these men, is when they make children feel important who don't feel important mm-hmm. anywhere else. So that's you've already mentioned mentor.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you mentioned that it's part of our outside the building at Believers Baptist Church. We do what we call outside the building, so it's projects and community events and ministry events mm-hmm. and opportunities that we do outside of our facilities. And if anybody is interested in being a mentor, then they can call the church and we can look at that. Now, of course, this year, because of the coronavirus pandemic, it has been messed up mm-hmm. and put it. You know, there's no longer schools, so we would have to, you know, reestablish mm-hmm. all those things beginning for the next school year. But thank you for those ideas and those thoughts, and I could add to that, pray.
That should be the first thing.
Yes, just pray that these girls, even if you don't know the names, that they would be able to be rescued, saved from these traps that they find themselves in. So the first book is called Tasha's Tattoo. The second book is called The Fallen Angel Salvage. And Linda, those are available on Amazon, right?
Correct.
And if any listener likes, they can call the church and we can get them in connection, contact with you, and you can also help them with that. So you're working on the third book, and as we mentioned, I am anxious to see it, but I am ready for the demise of Eric. Surely he will no longer be a part of the story. But let's mention back in 2012, I had the honor of doing your mother's funeral. And your dad had already passed, I believe,
the year before.
And you wrote a book, though, about the relationship that you had with your mother and your father during the last years of their life. It's called A Long and Winding Road, A Caregiver's Tale of Life, Love, and Chaos. And it's a good book as well. It is certainly has much to commend it in terms of love and compassion and concern, care, whereas the sex trafficking doesn't necessarily have those elements in it. But this was a great book, too, and I don't want to end the podcast without at least mentioning it and giving you a chance to speak to this as well. The story, as I remember, because I read this back, oh, I guess in about 2015, the story is of the journey that you and your husband David took with your parents in an RV for about seven weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Which there's some real humor in this. There's some sadness right. About the story, but tell us a little bit about that.
Right. The hook, if you would, on the what made the trip unusual is that Mom had Alzheimer's and Dad had vascular dementia at the time, so it was that's where the chaos came from.
Right.
And it is sad at times. It is funny at times. Sometimes you have to laugh to keep from crying. But it was my first book, and it was another one of those where I wanted people to feel. I wanted it to be real. I wanted them to know that caregiving is difficult because too many people want to put a happy face on it. Oh, no, I love Mom. She's perfect and blah, blah, blah. No, it's not. It's hard. Mm-hmm. And I wanted people to realize that it's okay for it to be hard and it's okay for it to be sad. And you don't have to be perfect. There are times when you're going to snap and you're going to do things that you're ashamed of. And then one of the blessings of Alzheimer's is that they forget.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't mean to make light of it, but it's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that is where that book came from, and then people fell in love with Mom and Dad from reading that story, and
yes.
they kind of did with like they did with Tasha. Well, what happened next? So there is another book, a follow up to that, called Mom's Long Goodbye, which basically is more of Mom, and it's a collection of the blogs that I wrote about our last few years together.
Right,
and I do write in flashback a lot. So if you want to know some things about mine and David's life before caregiving, there's things like that, too, because I do talk about that,
right.
about my upbringing and that kind of thing.
And that's the book that I actually have on my table at home that is in the stack.
The to-be-read stack.
You know, but I actually started that and got halfway through, and then, you know, there's another urgent book that has to be
right.
read or whatever the case may be. So they're all good, Linda, and I appreciate your talents and how God has used you, particularly with the sex trafficking and making us aware and thinking through that. And I hope that this podcast can be helpful and be, again, informative to others. And if any listener has a question, if you have a need that we can help with at the church, call the church, and we'll be able to make some give you some connections either to Linda or even to For the Silent, whatever way that we can help, we'd be glad to do that.
One thing I just happened
sure.
to think of, and this has come from your family reading this book on your vacation. If you decide you want to look up Tasha's tattoo on the website or on Amazon, Tasha is spelled T-A-T-I-A.
Yes, which was a point of contention. We called you from Colorado.
Yes, you did.
Mm-hmm. How do you pronounce this lady's name, this girl's name?
I didn't realize what a problem I was causing when I named her that. I used to work with someone named Tasha, and she spelled it that way. She started off to be Tanya, And every time I tried to write Tanya, it came out Tasha. And I, all right, if you want to be Tasha, you can be Tasha. But this, about the same week you called me, my brother sent me a whole list of ways to pronounce that and said, which one is right?
Because it's spelled Tasha.
Tadia is what a lot of people want to call it.
But, well, yes, thank you for making that clarification. And Linda, again, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad that you were able to be here with us this morning. So thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the Asking for a Friend podcast. If what you've heard today has been helpful to you, please subscribe. On behalf of the elders of BBC, I invite you to a worship service at Believers Baptist Church this coming Sunday. The Bible study hour begins at 9:15 and the worship service begins at 10:30. Grace and peace.